Ambassador, I think the first question is, the first week of President Joe Biden in office, have you seen signs that ASEAN will benefit? What has been discussed so far when it comes to ASEAN?
Well, so far in the first week of his office, he has done an enormous amount of work. Most of it has been in terms of trying to undo many of the things that his predecessor Trump did. He has pushed Congress and continues to negotiate with Congress on a $1.9 trillion COVID relief program. He has expanded testing for COVID-19, mandated mask wearing on interstate and federal property, rejoined the Paris Climate Accord, reversed the travel ban from several Muslim and African countries, and done many, many other things. In terms of ASEAN as such, he has not done anything with ASEAN as such, but he has certainly reached out to his Asia already in terms of calling up Japan and other Asian leaders and told them that one of the objectives of his administration is to improve relationships with partner allies and partners. So we know that ASEAN is going to be high on his agenda. The last time he was in office, his administration, which was the Obama administration, attended every ASEAN meeting, and we look forward to President Biden attending the current meetings here in ASEAN. He has already, his administration has already reached out to the ASEAN ambassadors, and this Friday, the U.S. ASEAN Business Council and Kurt Campbell, the Asia czar, if you will, are going to have a meeting in Washington, D.C. to talk about the Biden administration and their priorities for Asia as a whole and ASEAN in particular. So he's already reaching out to the ASEAN community.
We have also Alina, Director, Political Security Affairs, Asia Society Policy Institute, who's joining us from Washington, D.C. Alina, you are now in Washington, D.C. Have people started to analyze Biden's policies related to ASEAN, Asia, ASEAN specifically? What are the top priorities when it comes to ASEAN?
Well, it depends who you ask. I mean, if you ask someone who's interested in ASEAN, there's a lot of interest in trying to find out what the Biden administration has in store for the region. As the good ambassador has mentioned, ASEAN per se has not figured largely in this first week of the Biden administration. But there are encouraging signs. Ambassador Mihalak mentioned Kurt Campbell. Kurt Campbell is the Indo-Pacific Coordinator at National Security Council and an all Southeast Asia hand. So while there hasn't been any explicit articulation of policy towards ASEAN, those of us who watch Southeast Asia very closely are hopeful for some attention of the region, perhaps not at the top of Biden's priority list, but somewhere along the lines, we hope that the US will return to ASEAN.
Siobhan is the Chief Executive Officer of the American Malaysian Chamber of Commerce. Siobhan, we discussed Malaysia as a gateway into ASEAN before this webinar. Tell us big things that MCHAM members look forward to during the Biden administration.
Businesses here in Malaysia as well, I think in ASEAN, is looking forward, they're very much looking forward to a little bit more predictability with the Biden administration, a little bit more kind of a smoother and more calmer waters, I think. First of all, I think that predictability will help some of the integration that needs to happen in the ASEAN region. And I think that's another thing that we can look forward to for the ASEAN coming together, ASEAN region coming together, and being able to speak perhaps as a larger block to the US and kind of raise its profile a little bit. And I know it's going to be...
I can't hear any of the I can hear the moderator when he talks to me.
It's going to be a little bit tough to get the attention.
I can't hear any of the other...
But the China question between the US is going to probably dominate for a little while. But I think this gives a time for ASEAN to get their thoughts together and looking at issues that really build that cohesiveness, like talent mobility, a greater cohesion in how taxes are made, in customs duties and stuff like that. So I think those are the things that we're at the businesses here are looking forward to, is that predictability, the expansion of trade within the region.
Alex Capri is the Senior Fellow and Lecturer of Business School, National University of Singapore, joining us from Singapore. Alex, we have seen how China in the past 4 years has increased its physical and economic presence in Southeast Asia. We would like to know how the Biden administration will position itself in Southeast Asia. Let us narrow that down to the economic and investment, considering that the RCEP was signed in 2020.
We have to put this in the broader strategic context. As the earlier speakers have said, ASEAN is not at the top of the priority list. Obviously, we have the COVID issue in the United States. And, from a foreign policy perspective, you have the Biden administration looking to bring together historic coalitions, if you will. And if we put this in a techno-nationalist context, I think then ASEAN becomes an interesting place to watch. For one thing, in the U.S.-China hybrid Cold War, I'll call it, I think we will see the Biden administration looking to encourage the shifting of strategic supply chains out of China. And I think some of those supply chains will migrate to Southeast Asia. We've already seen that happening with Vietnam. I think there's a possibility that Singapore will continue to pick up as a capacity building technology hub. We'll see things moving, we'll even see technology moving out of Taiwan, which is, of course, a hotbed of controversy right now. So I think from a techno-nationalist standpoint, the restructuring of supply chains or the encouragement of restructuring supply chains into Southeast Asia, also the encouragement of new rule frameworks around AI ethics, this sort of confrontation between techno-authoritarianism, the Chinese model, and a more open digital democracy. How does that play out in the digital landscape across Southeast Asia? I think you'll see the U.S. looking to form partnerships and alliances in that regard. But again, there are other priorities immediately with the Biden administration. Most importantly, the tackling the COVID. Finally, I would say that as the Biden administration looks to become active again in the Paris Climate Accord and tackle climate change, I think there's a big emphasis being placed on infrastructure and investment in clean technologies, green tech, if you will. And again, there I think there are some possibilities for investment in partnerships in Southeast Asia along those lines.
Is there room for ASEAN on the agenda? Alina, do you think there's room for ASEAN on the agenda?
The importance of ASEAN will be self-evident, and this is something that the Biden administration officials themselves recognize. It's just a matter of time. As you mentioned, Rizal, domestic priorities take utmost urgency right now. And I don't think that we'll see anything concrete from the Biden administration policy-wise towards ASEAN until probably the second half of the year, when they're expected to show up, depending if it's in-person meetings or online for the ASEAN summit season. Secretary of State Blinken has already mentioned that the U.S. will show up and will be present in the region. So I think Southeast Asia is looking forward to, if not President Biden himself, someone very senior showing up at one of the ASEAN summits towards the end of the year.
But before the ASEAN summit, anything we can expect in the next few months, in the next few weeks, mentioning ASEAN?
I mentioned at the very least, I don't think you'll see anything dramatically significant. Maybe I'm a little less optimistic than some, but I feel I'm being realistic, particularly with all that's going on in the domestic environment in the US.
Domestic recovery of foreign investment, looking at the cost of COVID-19 on businesses and the US government, domestic recovery of foreign investment mutually exclusive. Will businesses or the government look outwards and continue to invest in ASEAN? How will they decide during this very trying time?
On where investments will go, I think supply chains are a constant flux, as Alex mentioned. There's a lot of movement going around. So I think the ASEAN nations need to look at their local environments and see whether or not they can lay down the fertile bed for FDI to land into their countries. as a position for, you know, is, and with RCEP in coming into force, it's just been signed. What are the opportunities in RCEP for US businesses to land in the region and do and develop trade for Asia, kind of based in Asia for Asia? So I think that's one of the things that FDI is going to be, we could be looking at to where that pool of FDI is. And as Alex mentioned, there's going to be stuff coming out of Taiwan. And for Malaysia and Singapore particularly, this is a very interesting because it's that higher end of FDI that's moving and would be moving out of Thailand, Taiwan, and that's what we want to capture. So I think it's really important to watch and see what is moving around the globe. ASEAN is competing with the entire global supply chain. And it's not just country to country, it's also internally. So each company is competing within themselves as to get the business. So I think, and that's not visible in most discussions. So I think it's really looking at the local environment. Each country has to look at their own environment and make it as attractive. But I just want to make one comment about what we could see from ASEAN in the next few months. I would say the one hope I have from the Biden administration is that they actually name a ASEAN ambassador. Because I think that would be really, really a step in the right direction to get the focus on into this area and fill out some of the ambassadorial positions that haven't been filled in recent years. And so I would say definitely the ASEAN ambassador. And of course, Singapore has been waiting a long time for a full-fledged ambassador.
How do you think the US will approach ASEAN this time around?
Well, I think the ambassador and others brought up some really important points around these multilateral frameworks, which the Biden administration is very keen to re-engage in. The first, I think, is it's not just the tariffs. When we talk about Section 301, I'm more concerned with the non-tariff measures that need to be addressed. And by that, specifically, we see a tie-in of addressing those non-tariff measures through robust multilateral frameworks, such as the CPTPP, which I really hope the Biden administration will look to rejoin. I don't know how soon that will be, given all the other priorities that we've talked about, but that is really important, because to resolve the non-tariff measures and to resolve the and to actually prosecute or execute the high standards of the CPTPP, such as IP protection, digital trade, data privacy, these are all really strong values that the United States needs to be pushing for the next level of trade, digital trade, as the ambassador mentioned. So these are non-tariff measure issues and non-tariff barrier issues, which are harder to resolve, and you typically need, I think, not an hegemonic power, but a stronger power, such as the U.S. So I think that has to happen.
I'll call that.
I think secondly, public-private partnerships are very important. So rather than have sort of a top-down, heavy Biden administration driven series of initiatives to engage ASEAN, I think it's really important that becomes a combination of multinationals, large businesses, and even small businesses, business associations, NGOs, et cetera, that form these ecosystems, if you will. They form these public-private partnerships to then pursue policy objectives, pursue investment, pursue sort of bottom-up and lateral capacity building. So I think that's where the Biden administration can turn to industry associations and so forth, and work together with those associations. I think that's really, really critical going forward for all these issues. I think the temperature has changed. Overall, The China-U.S. trajectory has not changed and will not change. The language will be toned down, it will be more measured, it will be more diplomatic, but the fundamental systemic differences of essentially a mercantilist China operating in a world that wasn't built for mercantilism, it was built for open trade, That is going to continue to chafe. That is going to continue to have friction, and even, you know, I think this sort of binary depiction of the world, you know, choose China, choose the United States, is somewhat overstated, exaggerated. Mm-hmm. I think there are opportunities for ASEAN countries to choose a sort of middle way, to have a bit more, you know, have a bit more lateral opportunities for trade and investment. That won't actually, you know, that won't China or choosing the U.S. And that's certainly true in RCEP. You know, China is a member of RCEP, but then I look at, you know, the data privacy, the transparency standards and so forth. I don't see how, you know, given the way the Chinese system works, some of those things are going to be achieved, right? So, again, I think there'll be a lot of other opportunities within ASEAN to form all kinds of other ecosystems.
Can member countries have good relationship with both the US and China? Picking up on what Alex said earlier, can member countries have both? Can they balance fresh interest from the US investors and China's commitment shown in the past 4 years?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a tendency to view things in the shorter term. And I think if you look at the trajectory, historical trajectory of Southeast Asia, smaller countries in the region have had to deal with great powers and empires for a very long time. So this is not something new to us. And I think I would put it a little more proactively, perhaps, but in the same spirit as what Alex just said, there is definitely room for ASEAN member countries to push their agency forward because, as you said, Rizal, the world has changed. And in the last 4 years, you know, smaller countries in the region haven't exactly been sitting around waiting for the US to get its act together. And I think you've seen, I mean, with apologies, of course, but I think it's really shown how smaller countries in the region have managed to push their own interests and stake in the digital and other economic rule setting game for their own interests. And so I think this has been an encouraging development and hopefully one that will continue. Don't forget also that ASEAN has strategic partnerships with both the US and China. I think you'll see this balancing game carry on for a long time to come.
But is ASEAN collectively strong right now as opposed to maybe 4 or 5 years ago? Because I think ASEAN member countries have issued statements that they will move forward as one voice, as one ASEAN when it comes to issues like balancing interests from the US and China. Alina, do you think ASEAN collectively is strong right now? Because taking into account the COVID-19 situation that we have currently?
I think ASEAN is strongest collectively in economic issues relative to political and security issues. And that's, I think, the weak link of ASEAN because obviously different countries have different security interests that don't always necessarily align. And we've seen this from the very beginning from ASEAN's conception, in fact. And it's something that ASEAN continues to struggle with. But economically, I think ASEAN has demonstrated that where the region's prosperity is at stake, it can come together. And you've seen this in the most recent example of RCEP, you know, ASEAN really driving RCEP through regardless of major power tensions.
Alina, let's talk about values. I think the values has shifted from when Biden swung in Washington, especially. I think people are more talking about accountability, openness, truth, working for the people. Do you think that values, those values that Biden has mentioned these past few days will translate into this relationship with ASEAN, with Asia? Do you think that will come through in the next 4 years?
Well, what we've heard from particularly Secretary of State Blinken is that the U.S. will listen with humility and confidence. And so I think in Southeast Asia, we certainly hope that that will be the case. Over the last few years, I think we've had an earful of something that not quite approaches either humility, but there was a lot of confidence to go around. Mm-hmm. And so I think definitely these values will be welcome in Southeast Asia. But also, I think trust building, and I think the point that has been made by the Biden administration is that it will have to earn that trust back. And I think that's a good point to start with rebuilding and reinvigorating the ASEAN relationship with the US. Mm-hmm.
We have about 4 minutes left. I just want to go a bit micro and ask each one of you, is Malaysia still an attractive destination for investment for the US investors moving forward? Siobhan, we'll start with you.
I think Malaysia has a lot to offer to US investors. It has great fundamentals. We've got also a history of US companies doing business in Malaysia. So it's about building on that success. And going back to the issue, the point we talked about, we're all looking to the digital economy. So the question is, how do we rise up to that challenge and bring down the disparity and use the frameworks that exist, and which is why RCEP and from U.S. businesses CPTPP would be really good, because it starts to enable those frameworks and put those fundamentals in place.
Alex?
Yeah, look, I think we have to be patient. We have to take this with a measure of realism. This is going to be a long and gradual process, and we need that consistency, right? We need that transparency. We need consistency throughout the process, and we need leadership. We need good leadership. So, I think we will see a return to that. Certainly predictability and consistency under the Biden administration. Let's see how the business community, how the partnerships can sort of coalesce around that and bring it together.
Alina?
Mm-hmm. I think specific to Malaysia, yes, but there's always room to improve predictability, stability. These have been mentioned. Rule of law is important, and the predictability of that rule of law being observed, I think, will be key to attracting investment in the near future.
And Ambassador?
Well, certainly certainty is one of the things that uncertainty is a very bad thing to have if you're trying to attract investment. And I think that right now, Malaysia is working hard to regain that certainty. Siobhan is right. The fundamentals in Malaysia are strong. Malaysia, with the its super corridor, with its innovation free trade area, digital free trade area, and other avenues, have certainly opened the digital door and are very welcoming. We do have a ways to go, as everyone has said. But I believe that, I remember when we first began talking for the first time about a free trade area with Malaysia, and it was said that Malaysia-US trade was higher and more valuable than India-US trade. And that's quite, I did not realize that. That shows that Malaysia is a very strong trading partner for the United States. And I think with the Biden administration, it's going to blossom even more and remain a very strong partner, which will be able to attract investment in the future.
On that note, we thank you very much, panelists, for joining us today. Of course, we apologize to those who are facing difficulties reconnecting. The conversation is still going on, as not everyone is facing the same problem. You may catch the conclusion of this webinar in the playback video we'll be uploading later today. We apologize for the inconvenience caused. Thank you so much for our panelists, to our panelists for joining us today. Ambassador Michael Mahalak, Senior Vice President and Regional Managing Director, US ASEAN Business Council, for joining us from Singapore, Alex Capri, a Senior Fellow and Lecturer of Business School, National University of Singapore, also joining us from Singapore, Siobhan Das, Chief Executive Officer, American and Malaysian Chamber of Commerce, Alina Noor, Director of Political Security Affairs, Asia Society Institute, also joining us from the Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for being with us today and to discuss this important issue as we move forward. Alina Noor, Director of Political Security, let me reinstate her position, Director of Political Security Affairs, Asia Society Policy Institute, joining us from Washington, D.C. Again, thank you very much for joining us. And we look forward to hearing more from all of you again in the future. And also thank you to the ASEAN or U.S. ASEAN Business Council. And this is Astro Awani Link. Thank you, and join us in our next discussion. Stay safe and thank you.